Always fun to see familiar faces and new ones in the chat room, but alas, I have to end the stream.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 80, recorded live Wednesday, September 18th, 2013. My name is Joel Duggan, and joining me this evening is Mr. Ryan Murphy from The Gamers Inn, Zombies Ate My Podcast, and Sleeping with the Elephant. Does the list go on, sir?
I'm not allowed to complain that I have no free time, or that I'm too busy, because this is all my own doing.
Yeah, you bring it upon yourself, sir.
Yeah.
Bring it upon yourself. If you happen to be new to the Citadel Cafe, dear listener, this is where myself and usually a guest or two come to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We're not myopic. It could be a website, could be a book, could be an app, could be a movie or television show. Whatever we see fit to tell you about, we will share our nerdy knowledge. And if we think it sucks or rocks, we'll also let you know about that stuff too. So that is it. That is the general scope of the show. So before I dive into the small talk with Ryan here, I do have to give a quick shout out to The Coast, which is a local weekly newspaper here in Halifax. And we have once again been nominated for Best Podcast here in Halifax. Last year in 2012, the Citadel Cafe managed to get a nod to second place, which we were very thankful for. But if you'd like to vote for The Coast in, vote for The Coast. Vote for The Citadel Cafe. Too many C's. If you'd like to vote for The Citadel Cafe in The Coast, go to thecoast.ca. There's a great big vote banner in the very top right-hand side. You'll be able to fill out the Reader's Choice survey, and when it gets to the Best Podcast section, give your vote for the Best Podcast, whatever you think that might be. And that's it. That's the easiest way to support the show at the moment, and we very much appreciate it. So that's it. Ryan, what's new with you, man?
Like I literally just got home because I spent like 2 hours looking at a wedding venue.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I don't think I've been on the show since.
You haven't.
Since Nerdacular.
You haven't. No. Well, congratulations from the Citadel Cafe.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm engaged, to Ashley. We were at Nerdacular and I took the chance to say, you know, I'm dragging in all this nerdy stuff and better get used to it. That's basically the conversation, I guess. She did say yes, and we're actually at our old university. We're looking at heading out to Trent University and getting married there. We're still looking at it, but
is that where you guys met?
Yeah, we met in university, and
that's
it's
cool.
Funny, like I was thinking about it, and sounds sort of cliche, but those 2 years I spent at university really were the most life-changing years, and I don't know. It's just, it was weird. And, you know, when you think about getting married at your school, it kind of sounds weird, but they really have a top-notch, I'm no wedding planner, but, you know, they made it really easy. And,
yeah.
But unfortunately we have to go to a bunch of other places and look, and
well,
the madness doesn't end.
Yeah. The thing about universities is that the campuses, at least as far as I can tell, around our neck of the woods, are always immaculate. You know,
right.
Obviously depending on the time of year, but Mount A, where I went to school, lots of people have been married there for the same reasons, because they meet there. And also Dalhousie here, I've seen several marriages at Dalhousie on campus. And the cool thing about most schools is that they're usually pretty old. Like you can get some very picturesque settings with, you know, buildings that are 100, 150 years old. You know,
right.
In the squares, maybe not so much for the ceremony, depending on where you want to have it, depending on what size of wedding you want to have, but certainly for pictures and stuff right afterwards, you can easily just march outside and have beautiful gardens and, you know, manicured lawns and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Trent's really nice because it's kind of, the campus is split up by a river. There's this nice river that flows, a nice big river, actually, and there's a huge bridge, you know, kind of connecting the campus, and it's all on one side of the water, but most of the festivities take place near the water, so there's tons of great places for photos. And I guess the only issue really is we're going to have to start looking at guest lists, and that's where weddings, to me, sort of start being about other people as opposed to being about the couple. And I dread having this conversation with my parents where I'm like, I'm thinking I'm going to have to cut the guest list down and maybe not invite every single cousin. And
yeah,
here's
something that both Jocelyn and I share an opinion on.
Mm-hmm.
Also something that she has said recently to her friend Jamie when Jamie and Preston were down visiting us this summer was that think about the people that you would just be heartbroken if they couldn't make it. That's your guest list.
See, and for me, that's easy for me. I mean, like, I would never take it personally. And it's weird that on the Citadel Cafe, we're talking about weddings. I swear.
Hey, you know what? There's a wedding nerd out there somewhere that's just geeking out about all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody has any suggestions, I'm all ears. But I'm personally of the matter. Like, you know, it's not personal, but I'm going to invite the people that I think, you know, like you said, you'd be heartbroken if they weren't there. And, you know, I know if my family's a very, you know, they're very traditional, you know, mm-hmm. This is not a traditional wedding we're going to be having in sort of comparison to what they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand there's going to be some growing pains.
Yeah, it's not their wedding.
Exactly. That's the one thing you got to remember. And mm-hmm. I think Ashley and I are seeing, are you know, sort of in agreeance and everything about this. And it'll be interesting. And you know, thank the gods it only happens once, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's usually the plan.
Yeah, no, that is exactly. Let's hope that's the plan because, man, a whole year to plan one, you know, sort of half a day event.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Oh, I think you might be underestimating how much of the day the event actually takes up.
All right, the weekend.
Yeah, You're looking at more of a 4 to 5 day kind of with all the prep and everything thrown in there. I'm sure you're looking at a much larger event than that. I mean, I suppose it does depend on the size of the wedding. Most of the weddings that I've been to have been fairly traditional. So there was a lot of, you know, there's the bachelorette and there's the bachelor party. And then there's the 2 days before the wedding when everybody's scrambling. And then there's the day of where everything starts at like 8:30 in the morning. And next thing you know, it's 8:30 at night. And neither the bride nor groom have had anything to eat, but they have had plenty to drink. Like, there's just, it seems to be the same rigmarole. No one ever seems to get better at it. Myself as a guest haven't enjoyed the weddings I've gone to. I've really enjoyed watching some close friends get married and stuff like that. So, it's been nice in that respect. And I've certainly learned a lot. Like, I've gone to some fairly big endeavors, and I've also gone to like pizza and homemade wine in tents on the beach and had a very good time. You know, it's all about the way that it's presented, but people's attitude towards it. I mean, if you've got a bunch of open-minded friends, then they're really not going to care. You know, they're going to be there for you guys just to pat you on the back and say, this is freaking awesome. You know, congratulations. Yeah. And that's it. You know, like, they're not really going to be too worried about it. But
I'm just worried about like the curmudgeon old person who comes up and says, back in my day, weddings were hosted with a bunch of people and chairs and, you know, it's
well,
just...
and the thing is though, like when they were married, their parents were saying the same thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess
like
they just made the mistake of listening.
You know, I mean, the social conventions change so much in the course of 30 years, you know, which is about the average, you know, for someone getting married these days, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have a kid, and then 30 years later, give or take, that kid is probably going to find themselves being married. Mm-hmm. And, like, what can change in 30 years? Like, everything can change in 30 years. So, I mean, what makes a good wedding in... you know, 2000 does not make a good wedding in 2032. You know, like I wouldn't worry too much about it, man.
I, you know what? I'm trying not to. I want to get excited about it. And the one thing I don't want to happen is just like, you know, people just constantly are just drama. And, you know, I think at the end of it all, like, I think I said this a few times over a family dinner, like, this is our wedding. We're going to make the invitations. When you get one, you're welcome to say yes or no, you know?
Yeah.
And I said that I fully meant it as well. And not in a mean way, just in a, you know, we're going to have a good time no matter where it is or what we do. It's just going to be a good time.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you can probably use to smooth over, you know, any kind of, agitated guests would be, you know, serving them some Keurig coffee.
Yes.
That tends to calm people down.
I've been enjoying my Keurig coffee, so I could, you know, just a quick plug for Keurig. If they want to sponsor my wedding, they're more than welcome to.
There you go.
The reason I put this in the notes is today over lunch, someone told me that Tim Hortons had Keurig capsules. Now, first of all, do you have a Keurig? Do you use a Keurig?
No, we have a French press.
Yeah, you're a traditional coffee guy, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't even do drip coffee anymore. I do the French press thing.
See, I was thinking of going French press because
they're cheap.
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine at work has one, and he just has it down in the break room and uses it to make coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And because office coffee is never anyone's first choice, unless you've been there for 30 years.
Then it doesn't matter. It. Yeah.
Yeah, but
the taste buds are all fried.
I got a Keurig from a good friend of mine as a housewarming gift, and I've wanted one for so long because instant coffee sounds amazing to me. I've been on, as a Canadian, I'm always on the search for some sort of Tim Hortons easy duplicate, and mm-hmm. I haven't quite made it. I've tried the grounds and the beans and, the Tassimo discs, but I'm having the Keurig one right now. It tastes pretty good.
Yeah, I've had them. My mother has one and my sister has one. I want to say it's Keurig. It's that or Tassimo. I mean, they're the same sort of idea. They inject hot water into a little capsule and then it makes coffee in about a minute and a half or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's good. It's very good coffee. I really can't say anything bad about the taste. The issue that I take with it is just like the machines are somewhere between $150 and $200, depending on whether you get it on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got these expensive capsules, which may not be crazy expensive when you compare it to like going to Tim Hortons or going to Starbucks every day. Mm-hmm. But you've got those, and then there's all the waste. Like you've always got this plastic thing to throw away. I'm sure some of them are recyclable, but how many people actually do that? That sort of thing. For me, the French press is straight up easy. I put any grounds I want in it, and when they're done, they go in the compost. I rinse a little bit down the drain. I try not to, but that tends to be how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Like there's no paper. There's no, I don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. Now on the flip, it's difficult when you have company because mm-hmm. our current French press, and we could buy a 4-cup, but we only have a 2-cup. So I can only make 2 cups of coffee at a time.
Yeah. I mean, you have the same issue with the Keurigs or the Tassimos in the sense that you don't want to go through a bunch of capsules. I mean, not that your guests, there might be some guests that you want to treat to a Keurig, but there might be others where, it's just easier to make a pot of coffee. And I mean, I still have like the drip coffee that I sort of treat the Keurig as like sort of like a special, man, I need a coffee at 8 o'clock to kind of boost through, right?
Yeah, my mother does both. She has a Keurig mm-hmm. and we bought her a French press to take down to Florida with her so she didn't have to haul this Keurig back and forth. And so she uses the French press in both places, but she likes the Keurig when she goes to work. Like up in the morning, get a coffee, it's in your cup, you're out the door, don't have to worry about anything. But when she's home on like a Saturday or on a day that she's off, she uses the French press because she likes it that way too.
Yeah. It's nice to mix things up. And I'm kind of into the flavored coffee sometimes. I try to,
mm-hmm.
in the evening, I want to have a lighter coffee. So I'll throw like a raspberry truffle light coffee in there. Mm-hmm. And, I rather than stock like 100 bags of, beans of coffee, I can just have my one standard bag of coffee and then have like a bunch of different Keurigs capsules. But
now, do you, that lighter coffees have more caffeine, right?
I guess what I mean is like light, wait, isn't the extra bold has extra caffeine?
No, it's the reverse. The darker the coffee, the less caffeine.
I've been doing this. I am a coffee noob.
It was backwards when I first learned that too, but, uh-huh. I think it's because the longer the beans are roasted, the more caffeine is just like baked out of them or roasted out of them or whatever. Darker beans taste more coffee flavored. Mm-hmm. Like it's a richer coffee flavor, and can be more bitter. But for lighter roasts, there tends to be more caffeine. And I feel like this may not be true of Keurig stuff, but certainly when you go to a place like the Second Cup or Starbucks, the flavored coffees tend to have more caffeine. At Starbucks, it might not be so because Starbucks usually has like syrup flavors. Whereas Second Cup, in my experience anyway, has got their flavors are brewed. Like the beans are flavored and then ground and then brewed that way. But one of the things that I do like about the French press, which I don't know, you might be able to correct me on this, about the Keurig, is that, depending on how strong a cup of coffee I want, I can let it perk for 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15, like depending on how intense I want my coffee. Can you do that with the Keurig?
Your only options with the Keurig is whatever capsule you put in it and then your cup sizes. So, like, usually what I'll do is I'll make a bigger cup of coffee, which, you know, strains the beans more, right?
Right.
So you're getting, I guess, less coffee, you know, less caffeine, but more coffee.
Mm.
I usually make the big cup, but, you know, you can definitely condense that into a smaller cup and then, you know, you get more of that caffeine in there. But I don't think you can set any timing settings. It's all fairly like a standard time setting, at least with the one I have. I don't know if I have the, yeah, I think I have the middle of the road one, but maybe there are options out there that let you extend the time.
You know, you can get attachments where you can put your own grounds in too, right?
Yeah, they have like the personal K disc, whatever they call it. And it's something I've been thinking of looking into to see what the flavor would be like, you know, because it's a machine and I like to think it, you know, makes the coffee different than a drip coffee would do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe it would taste better just because of the way it's being prepared.
Yeah, I mean, I've had both at my mom's place. I've had, like, you know, a flavored cup or a Mexican dark roast or something like that, you know, when we're having dessert down there for dinner on Sunday. But then I've also had just, you know, she put her own grounds in, and I do a mix of stuff here. I mean, like, we buy Maxwell House just for, like, every day, kind of, you know, get up in the morning, just make coffee without, you know, before you can really see straight. But for, like, you know, weekends with pancakes and stuff like that, I have a grinder and I have fresh beans in the cupboard that I'll grind fresh coffee on Saturday or Sunday for events like that. And that's a big difference. You notice a huge difference between buying mass-produced coffee on sale for $7 for a kilogram and when you pay, you know, $7 or $8 for a bag of beans and you fresh grind whatever you need for the next day, you know, that morning. Fresh ground coffee has a huge, huge flavor difference compared to just, you know, not over the counter stuff, but like consumer brand stuff. But I found, you know, it sounds sacrilege. I really don't like Tim Hortons. I'll deal with it if I have to, but I really don't like it.
I was joking. I mean, like, you know, it's funny, like an American would probably like, Paul's like, everybody drinks Tim Hortons up in Canada, but it's not true. And I've sort of fallen out of the Tim Hortons bandwagon as well. I find going to McDonald's more for their coffee.
Apparently McDonald's has done a really good job with their coffee.
Yeah, no, it is really good. And they mix it up a lot more than Tim Hortons. I mean, Tim Hortons, the last thing they did was, hey, we made our cup sizes bigger and we're going to charge you more.
Yeah.
Whereas McDonald's is, I mean, they have the, you know, the dollar deal. I think at one point, like, they're giving away free small coffees. Now they're doing like the punch card thing. And one of the most annoying things about the punch card is having to like the awkward, like, oh, here's my card, stamp it, please.
Mm-hmm.
But McDonald's, you know, they're smart. They have a really good marketing team. I made a fool of myself, but I learned. I tried to give her the card and she's like, oh no, you stamp it yourself. And I'm like, oh, how would I do that? It's like, it's on the cup. And it's like, no, I know the card is on the cup because you literally pull the card. It's in the cup. Like you pull it off as if it's like part of the wall.
Yep.
And then right beside it is this little sticker. You stick it on yourself. It's it's like McDonald's. Like, if only you didn't serve crappy burgers, then, you know, you'd be perfect.
Yeah.
They really took it to the next level. And, I mean, as funny as a punch card is, it is kind of cool when you think about it.
Yeah.
I wish a lot more places did it.
I use a Starbucks card on my phone. It's not even a card. It's just part of the Passbook app. And I get, you know, $1 off drinks now and again whenever I pay with it. I get, it's usually specific drinks. Like if I want to get a special like pumpkin spice latte or something like that, I'll get like $1 off when the season comes around as it has. I have not had my fall pumpkin spice latte yet because it's not fall yet.
Well, in 4 days.
4 days, you know, but I've got 4 days to pretend it's summer. There's a star system, like however many, and it's not like per drink. It's like some drinks are worth more than one star. You know, because some drinks at Starbucks are like $6, you know. But really, the most of the time when I go to Starbucks, which is my preferred coffee place, I'm not getting the fancy stuff. Like, I just want a nice cup of coffee. And that's generally where I get it. It costs me $2 compared to, what, $1.67 or something at Tim Hortons. And I like the dark roast. There's a Dragon blend. It's a dark roast blend. They've got some, like, a Japanese blend or something going on at Starbucks lately. And it's very good. And I really enjoy that kind of stuff.
Now, when it comes to Starbucks, like, I know, like, a lot of big city listeners will be like, oh, Starbucks is on every corner. But in the town I live in, there's two Starbucks, and they're, like, two blocks apart. So it's kind of inconvenient in the sense that you either go to the one that's inside Chapters or you go to the one down the street a little bit that's its own building. Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of Starbucks in where you're from, where
yeah.
you are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jocelyn actually just got back from the mall today, and she said that there's a new Starbucks inside the Target, which is one of the corner stores now in Micmac Mall. There's a Starbucks Express at the bottom of the escalators in the mall, and then in the parking lot for the mall is a Chapters that has a Starbucks in it. In Spring Garden Road, I think there's two, and then there's another one down in Barrington. There's no Starbucks in downtown Dartmouth. And then there's several on the outskirts, like in subdivisions, you know, where there's strip malls and that kind of stuff. But there's certainly more Tim Hortons than there is anything else in the city, because obviously they've been around longer. But yeah, there's a fair amount. Like, you can, in downtown Halifax, you don't have to walk very far before you hit a Starbucks. However, there is some local stuff. Like, Uncommon Grounds is a local cafe chain, and they've got really good products, good muffins, treats, coffee, all that kind of stuff. And then there's also Just Us, I think. And there's one other coffee place that's also local. Steve Reno's is another local place. So there's a mix of coffee culture here. Like, people can hit their Starbucks if they want, but they can also go to a local haunt, which is nice. So between Tim Hortons, Starbucks, and local places, there's pretty much a coffee place on every corner.
Yeah, and I mean, there's not a lot of Starbucks here, but there are a lot of Tim Hortons. But there's also, like, in the downtown area, there's a coffee shop, like, every other building. And, I mean, I'm in a city where there's a university on one end and a college on the other, and they all sort of converge to the downtown, right?
Yeah.
And the downtown area is just swarming with these, like, typical, and I'm not being negative here, like, those typical, like, coffee shops where you'd see someone with a MacBook or see someone, you know, jamming on a guitar, hitting the bongos. I mean, there's, you know, they all vary in degree of hippie. I try to, you know, hit the middle ground, you know, get my culture in sometimes, but I'm a big fan of, like, you know, the homegrown coffee shops once in a while, just to kind of, like, you know, feel like you're giving back to the city once in a while, you know, as opposed to going to the big chains.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I like doing that stuff too. Like, I don't know. I like to support local when I can, but going to Starbucks, I don't feel bad about it. Like,
well, you shouldn't.
No, I mean, like, if a local place really wants me to go to their spot, then make it comfortable, you know, serve a good cup of coffee at a price that everybody, you know, on par with everybody else, and I will go there, you know. But a lot of the places locally that are small chains, they're just not comfortable, you know, or they're not convenient. Like, I mean, they're really convenient for students, but then I'm really out of my way, you know. And a lot of times I'm meeting other people, so you're kind of meeting in the middle ground where most people like Starbucks, where not everybody likes specific local chains. And if you're having a business meeting or spending the afternoon working with people in my office away from my office, then you know, that it tends to come in handy that way. But yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've been doing as I've been sipping my coffee this afternoon was update to iOS 7, and that is I don't have a lot to report yet because, of course, I just got it. I was mentioning last week on the show when we were talking about the new phones and the new iOS coming from Apple that I was going to check it out. I haven't updated my iPhone 4 yet, but I did update my iPad. And I have to say, it looks pretty snazzy. I'm very envious of anybody right now that has a Retina display. Because I've got an iPad 2, and it's nice, but it's not really high res. And I can see this particular design for the OS looking very sharp on things like my mother's new iPad and anybody else out there that has stuff like that. Especially as an artist, like, I can really see doing some art apps with this new OS and all that kind of stuff that would take advantage of, you know, the different background processing things that they've got in there. And it seems faster. I'm surprised. You know, with old devices, sometimes you run the risk of slowing the device down as you get a new OS, but I feel like Apple is savvy to the fact that, you know, out of their 700 million iOS devices in the market, a good chunk of them, you know, are older and not necessarily going to be able to handle the best and brightest and most beautiful of the OS versions. But you and I were talking just before we started the show that you have an original iPad.
Yeah, I mean, I have the iPad 1, and I mean, they always say not to buy, you know, the first version, because it is the first to get chopped off the compatibility list. And I was not surprised when actually the iPad 1 was left out of the iOS 6's compatibility list. So it's currently sitting at iOS 5. Now, I've been looking at buying a new iPad for a while, but it always seems when I have the means to do so, it's, you know, halfway through the cycle, and it's like, I'll wait until they refresh it, and, you know, it's just, it's like, it's a never-ending circle, but I don't use, and the thing is, the fact is that I don't really use my iPad, not because I don't find a use for it, but because it is so old. And you mentioned, like, the way the OSs would constantly, you know, as far, you know, you keep going, they keep getting slower. Man, that iPad 1 is barely usable in comparison to what it was when I first got it. It was very useful, but now it's just really slow because, you know, they've added multitasking and, you know, all that crazy stuff. And it's just, it starts to bog down.
Yeah, I've had good luck with updating to new operating systems. I have a 4. I'm actually going to throw out a quick question here to our live chat room to see what everybody else is running. So if you have a minute, let us know what iOS device you're using and if you've updated to iOS 7. One of the things that I've noticed with iOS 6 on the 4 is that it actually got faster. And so when my mother was concerned about, you know, is this going to, you know, I don't have a new phone. She's got a 4S. She doesn't have a 5. And she was concerned that, you know, it was going to slow stuff down because just out of her lack of experience, she's not even had her Apple devices for a year yet, you know, so she just got used to the old OS and now they're changing everything on her.
Yeah, completely changing.
Yeah. No, there was a 20-minute tech support call before the show tonight. I mean, and it's she caught on really quick. It's not like it was a difficult hump, but when you get used to doing something visually and that's how you recognize and navigate your device, when they change, not just the way that it works, but how icons look and how they move and how they get you from point A to point B, it was a little bit, you know, to explain. But the I've had good luck with you know, devices going forward, so I'm hoping that it doesn't change too much about my 4. It hasn't slowed down the iPad 2 from what I can tell. I haven't tried to do any crazy multitasking, like, you know, have a YouTube video playing or AirPlay something to the TV via Netflix and then try, you know, to join a chat room or do anything, you know, surf the internet, that kind of stuff. But I'm sure it should be fine. It doesn't seem to be doing too much. Molly in the chat room says she has an iPhone 4 and Joe says he has a 4S. And they've both upgraded to iOS 7. So obviously that just happened today. They have probably haven't had a lot of time to check it out. But if you guys want to email the show, either in the chat room or anybody else listening, and give us your thoughts on iOS 7, we'll probably do a bit of a summation next week when we have some chances to play around and try to break it and nerd out a little bit about all the cool stuff that it does. I'm already just enjoying the transitions and the way that, you know, you close and open apps and that kind of stuff. Like, I, you know, they've got the parallax effect when you tilt the gyroscope around and just, it makes it feel like a classier device. Not that it wasn't already, but I feel like it's a nice shiny upgrade.
How heavy of an app user are you? Do you use a lot of big apps or just a lot of small apps?
It depends. If I'm sketching, some of the apps can be kind of taxing. I want to say Sketchbook Pro is pretty light, but some of the painting apps that I mess around with can be a little bit heavier.
Okay.
The things that I notice that are slow are some games, but again, like, it depends on what I'm doing. And I feel like the biggest speed bog for me is Wi-Fi. I find that the iPad 2 is not very good if you're not crazy close to your Wi-Fi signal. Like, I mean, if I'm in the studio or the living room or the, you know, it's okay, but if I start to get down to the bedroom with the router at the other end of my, you know, 3-bedroom apartment, it doesn't seem to have the same get up and go as far as loading, say, like DeviantArt websites, web pages where there's lots of visual content, ads, things like that. I've also noticed, and now this might not be the iPad's fault, and I'm going to put good money on the fact that it's not. Ad heavy sites like what is now Mashable, for anybody that follows them on Twitter. I use Tweetbot. And so between Tweetbot and Mashable, when you go to surf to a website inside of Tweetbot, it takes so long for all of the ads, banners, and probably some mobile reformatting to load that I can get halfway through the article twice before the website will like refresh and I'll lose my place again.
Huh.
Drives me nuts. Like, I mean, I'm to the point where I just don't bother to click on Mashable stuff, or I open them up in Safari separately. And I still have that problem. Like, I still have that load problem where, you know, you get through the first two sentences and it just, it keeps on resetting the page because there's just ad after ad after ad. I'm just like, God, like and it's not even content that, it's not like it's news, you know, like it's generally just internet fluff, you know, like here are 10 things that the internet didn't know yesterday. Like, okay, well, I'm sipping my morning coffee. I need something to just kind of browse around on. It's great. It's not, you know, necessary content. So I'm not really hooked on Mashable at the moment. So those are the kind of things that I noticed with the iPad slowing down is multitasking in the web space. When you're dealing with Wi-Fi, that tends to be where it slows.
Well, I mean, I haven't updated yet. I actually have to make space on my phone before I actually do that. But I've noticed over the course of the day, like I work in social media, so I'm constantly on Twitter, and I noticed throughout the day announcements that this has been updated and this has been updated, but when you click through, you'd realize that these apps aren't being updated; they're being re-released with, you know, the price tag again. And I'm not complaining; developers deserve to be paid. But I use some bigger apps in the sense that they're like, you know, not your typical $4.99 like OmniFocus, which I use to keep track of all my tasks and stuff. Is a $20 app, and they've re-released it, so. And it holds, you know, not only new features, but a look and feel that matches iOS 7. I think a lot of developers are taking iOS 7 as an opportunity to refresh the look of their app, but also, you know, charge for an upgrade. I mean, I'm all for developers charging for huge update releases because, you know, you make $2.99 4 years ago, that doesn't keep the office running, right?
No, true.
And Apple does not offer any sort of upgrade purchase. You know, a lot of these companies would rather say, hey, if you already own a previous version, it's 50% off. But that's something Apple doesn't offer. So I feel kind of bad for the developers because they have to stick it to the consumers because, you know, Apple hasn't built this technology in. And I wonder if that's something that you've come across or will come across with some of your apps, or
I haven't come across it with anything. Not yet. I mean, like I said, like, I mean, in true to form, I mean, it was a quote from Tom Mayer today on TNT is that everybody is handing in their homework at last minute, because this morning and last night, I mean, there must have been 60 apps on my iPad and iPhone that were all updating with iOS 7 compatibility stuff. You know, and a lot of times that's not necessarily a whole lot new in the background. They were free updates. And a lot of times it's just, it's a new icon, you know, like it's a flat look. It just wants to mesh a little bit better. Apple might have changed the specs on some things too. So I think that some developers are just reacting to that. I don't have any really large apps like that I pay for. I've paid for a few, but they're all under $5. What's Downcast? Do we remember what that is for iOS? Is that $3?
Yeah, I think it was $3. Yeah. I think
$4.99 at most.
Yeah, I think Downcast is an example of an app that I think is staying the course with their current look, having just released you know, their Mac version. But I know Instacast, and I think Pocket Cast was just a free update with a new look. But I know Instacast has once again released a new app. This is probably their third time now releasing a new app with a price tag. And again, not complaining. I'm all for it, but I sort of see it as an opportunity for the consumer as well, because, well, with a new price tag, you've sort of reset your, you know, your outlook on apps. So I'm kind of looking at OmniFocus and I'm thinking, you know, maybe I want to try Things now. And, you know, if you're familiar with the GTD landscape of apps, you have like, you know, you have OmniFocus, then you have Things, and then there's like a couple other smaller ones out there. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, if this is also an opportunity for consumers to say, like, see what else is out there, considering you're back at a level playing field for in terms of costs and stuff.
I don't know enough about the back end of it to know whether the developers really did have to rewrite a lot of stuff, you know, to take full advantage of the new apps. And I mean, I don't know how much of it would necessarily pertain to the iPad 2. but certainly the iPhone 5, the 5S and the 5C, in particular the 5S, I can see some developers wanting and needing to update their stuff to take advantage of the new hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much just the new software, but yeah. Anyway, we can come back to that, you know, next week, and after everybody's had a chance to take a look at iOS 7 and see what's going on. I love this stuff. I mean, even if it doesn't work well on my phone, it's still interesting to me to play around and see what works and what doesn't, and you know, even just to try for a couple days to have the old iOS on my phone and the new iOS on my iPad and wondering whether they're going to have a problem talking to one another. Cause I mean, I do that all the time where I, you know, surf the website on one and then, you know, catch up on Twitter on the other and see whether they sync fast or not and all that kind of stuff. She'll be an interesting week of troubleshooting. And I'm certainly going to be having some tech support calls with my family, I'm sure. Cause, dad, his girlfriend, my sister and my mother all have iOS devices and they are savvy, but not under the hood savvy. So when stuff like this happens, they usually need a little bit of a explanation to see what's going on, or at least they have questions where, you know, Apple's moved something and, you know, no one's taking the time to Google a YouTube video as, you know, like, where did this go? You know, they call Joel first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a big update. It's not like, the previous releases where it was like new features. This is, you know, feature complete, but just a completely different look.
Mm-hmm.
With maybe a few tweaks, but then again, I haven't gotten into it and I haven't paid a lot of attention to it. So I'm really looking forward to getting it on there and then, you know, probably, you know, trying to stay up super late, trying to figure out all the cool things it can do. You know, it's new OS day and I'm always into new tech and software.
Yeah, and I don't remember who it is, but there's usually a guy, I think he writes for the Huffington Post, and he, you know, as a journalist, he gets early access and is under NDA, and then shortly after the release of the new OS, he releases a catch-all article that covers every last little update. Like, he goes through, you know, the it's almost like a patch update, you know, for a video game. He goes through the log and explains what's new, why it's new, how it works, how it benefits you, and then he goes on to the next feature. And it's just this long, kind of interesting but hard to digest article, sometimes, you know, 40 pages or more, but well-written and usually really informative. And I often end up bookmarking that, you know, shortly after an iOS version comes out so that I can sit in bed at night and learn two or three new things before I go to bed. So, but what, you know, talking about all these screens and new apps and new things to check out, what have you been watching on the small silver screen? Anything cool on television?
Only the best show ever, which is Breaking Bad.
Oh, I thought you were going to say My Little Ponies for a second, but never mind. I digress.
I'm not that kind of person. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's all
You're
good.
Not a brony?
No.
Me neither.
It's on Netflix. I think I loaded it up for like 2 minutes and was like, I feel weird. And again, not a comment. I mean, nope. As Canadians, we try not to, you know, bother people. Mm-hmm. Breaking Bad, a lot of just constantly waiting for the next episode. And this is the final series finale coming up in 2 weeks. And it's probably the best TV show I've ever watched, and it's the best finale that we're getting. I mean, you know how you were looking forward to the end of Lost and seeing how they wrapped it up?
I never watched Lost. So
oh, no. You never were? Okay, no. Well,
I know that the internet was, I know that everybody was going crazy over it, and I mean, and I should interject here and just know that Jocelyn and I are still on season 4 of Breaking Bad.
Oh, okay.
And we are struggling even to get that far. So we're not super fans. Jocelyn wants to finish it just so she can keep up with the internet, you know, and not get spoiled. So, and if anybody's listening that hasn't seen the latest Breaking Bad, Ryan won't get into spoilers. He'll talk around everything.
And I'm not even going to go into detail, just to say that it's a show that is, can be tough watching week to week just because you constantly want to see what happens next. But I found this show was a lot more watchable because I got into it late. I watched the first 3 seasons sort of like on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're watching it week to week, especially with season 3 and 4, where there's sort of this, it's the mid-range of the series. It definitely works as a complete series in the sense that there's a beginning, middle, and end. With the middle being sort of a, well, just it's a middle part. It's, mm-hmm. It's a little boring, but it's, you know, slowly building to yeah. something. I think if you stick it out and if you've made it to season four, you owe it to yourself to get to season five, because the things that happen in season five sort of set up the beginning of the end. And then, you know, you start getting to the end and you start to realize that they are really going to take the show and end it, you know, like, it's hard to go into it without spoiling it, but definitely recommend it. But another show that's ending that has literally gone off the rails is Dexter.
No, I've heard bad things about this on Twitter.
Yes. Dexter was a fantastic show when it started out, when it was using the books as sort of a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, Dexter's always been this quirky, corny, sometimes odd show.
Mm-hmm.
But the ending season has just been ridiculous. Just poor acting and ridiculous plot lines. Like, there was literally a scene out there, and there are gifs to prove it, of Dexter's son running on a treadmill, you know, hilariously hitting the buttons up, and then he falls and cuts his chin, and it looks ridiculous. And that's all in service of what little story there is. And have you watched any Dexter?
I tried to watch season one with a friend who was a big fan and had them on DVD and got them for Christmas. We were watching them, catching up over dinner, and we watched two episodes and I just wasn't into it. I didn't like it. It wasn't my thing. You know, I don't know what, I mean, I know it, my sister loves it. My dad is currently, slowly realizing that Netflix actually has good content now. And
so he's been watching My Little Ponies.
Well, no, but I remember, like, it's funny, the other day I had coffee with dad and he came up to me. He's like, Dad, he's like, Joel, okay. You guys watch a lot of Netflix. Yeah. Okay. Have you seen Justified? And he's all like excited to tell me about this brand new show he's discovered called Justified. It's like, yeah, Johnson and I just finished season four last night. You know, like, and I've been talking about it on the show forever. And so he's really excited about Dexter. He's been watching, like, you know, a season a week on Netflix. So I know there's people out there that like it. And I just, for whatever reason, I find it just out there. It just doesn't really grab me. And if it goes farther out there, then it's probably not for me.
It's an odd show. I got into it in my university college years where, you know, you had a lot of time to kill and you were rooming with two guys who was like, okay, rather than study, let's marathon, you know, this season of Dexter. I mean, that's how I got through Battlestar Galactica, you know. It was just something we did. And I found myself dropping out of a lot of TV shows. Let me finish, Mom, if you're listening. Dropping out of a lot of TV shows because it was just like, I don't have a lot of time anymore to watch TV. So it's like, well, goodbye, House. Goodbye, you know, just these weird dramas that nobody has time for. But at this point, with seven seasons, it's like, well, I guess might as well just finish this. And they're really making it hard to stick it through to the end. And yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah, we like, we don't really binge watch unless it's a cliffhanger. And that's what I like about having the access with Netflix is, like, right now, Joss and I are slowly making our way through Mad Men. Ooh. And still a difficult show to watch sometimes with with your, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend, fiance, husband, wife. It's it can deal with some pretty interesting issues back in the 60s. And it can also be kind of the worst in people, but then highlighting it like they're rock stars. So it's a little bit difficult that way. It's still a very good show and we do like it. But we like to have something to unwind at the end of the night. You know, that's not a video game. That's not, you know, anything too intense, like an action show or something like that. Sometimes we'll grab a cup, like a short comedy, like Community or something like that, but we've watched all those. And so now we've been doing Mad Men. And we have the option, if we're not too tired, to watch the next part of Cliffhanger, because it's all there on Netflix, or at least up to season five. We haven't been doing a lot of real binge watching. The last thing that we went through really quickly was Hemlock Grove. Okay. And that was like, you know, Jocelyn would be off for a couple of days, and we would watch one on my lunch break, and then we would watch one at my dinner break, and then we would watch one again before we went to bed. So, like, we'd be watching, like, 2 to 3 episodes a day, and that was a lot. And like you, I don't have a lot of time for that kind of stuff, but I like to take the time, you know, at the end of the evening, just watch one thing. And what's great about Netflix, of course, is that like you can throw it on at 10 or 11, and within the hour, you're done the show and you're in bed. Mm-hmm. Like, because it's only 45 minutes or 50 minutes or whatever, and then you still get time to go get ready for bed and get into bed, and you're not, you know, an hour and a half or whatever, you know, with like, say, movies and stuff like that. But
yeah, with Mad Men, I was really into that show, and I have season 6 sitting around somewhere, you know, whether I'm going to wait for it to go on Netflix or something, I don't know, but I find that show is calculatingly boring.
Oh, really?
In the sense that it's interesting. I find it very interesting. I find I'm always paying attention to it, but it's like the show, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but I find myself like, as soon as I feel like, I don't know if I can watch Mad Men anymore, because it's kind of, I can't even explain what happened this season, you know?
It has a very unique pace.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
and
it's
hard
not boring,
to figure out what the main storyline is. Like, I mean, you know Don Draper's a main character, but there's so much else going on, and you're trying to figure out, well, what am I supposed to be focusing on this season? Like, what am I supposed to be focusing on this show?
Mm-hmm.
And it has a neat way of saying, you know, it's not good, it's not bad, you know, in terms of like what's happening. It's just life, you know, mm-hmm. and life just seems to happen to these people in really interesting ways. And I like it because both Justin and I like a little bit of an escape in our TV. Like, we don't necessarily want to watch a crime drama that's set in today. We'd rather watch a crime drama set in like the 1600s or something, you know. So to check out Mad Men, which is just, you know, 50, 60 years ago, that kind of makes sense, you know, in terms of a little bit of an escape for us. But, mm-hmm. but one of the things that actually we took in the other night, which was a surprise for me, was a direct-to-DVD release called Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox, which was released by DC and WB Home Entertainment. So, you know, true to form, it's a pretty good animation for, you know, superhero stuff along the lines of the Batman, you know, Warner Brothers TV show that we used to watch in the 90s, everybody growing up with that at lunchtime, I think it was on. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a little bit different than what you're used to with some of these DVD releases. They take the opportunity with these home movies to or home video releases to redesign characters. They give a different artist, a different character designer, a chance to, you know, reimagine what Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman all look like. And this one, of course, is, as the title suggests, focus on the Flash and his powers and a story based on a graphic novel of the same name. And I won't get into too much now because I'd want to recommend it, and then I'll get into some spoilers maybe next week, because what happened was I was telling Jocelyn about this movie that I watched over lunchtime over dinner, and she got so interested that she actually stopped me and said, I want to watch that. Like, I want to see that. And Jocelyn likes her superhero stuff, but it's not necessarily something she would sit down and watch on her own, because some of this is really heavy comic book stuff. Like, there are heroes and villains in this that are pulled from like second and third tier Justice League, where like I look at them as like, I think I might have seen them in one comic mm-hmm. once, but I don't know who they are. There's a villain, oh gosh, what's his name, something the demon, I can't remember what his full name is, but like he talks in rhyme, Etrigan the demon, and it's a real character, and he seriously speaks in rhyme all the time. They poke fun at it, but those are the kind of things that you can only really get in comics. And so the show in itself has, or not the show, the movie has some of those superhero tropey type things in it. However, it is a very compelling story to the point where I watched it twice in one day, and I'm pretty picky when it comes to animation, and visual storytelling and stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. Jocelyn really liked it. Some of the shocking moments for her were given away a little bit before we watched it, because I was talking over dinner, not thinking she would want to watch it. And I asked her, I said, well, I'm not going to spoil this for you, am I? And she actually said, no, just tell me, like, I'm not going to watch it. And of course, once I started to tell her what was happening, she's like, oh, crap, now I actually want to watch this. It takes some of the classic voice acting that you know. And love, like Kevin Conroy as Batman, and he does the Batman voice for every animated version of Batman plus the video games. Like, you, the moment that you hear him, you just instantly think Batman. But also a fun fact is that two of the main characters are voice actors from Grey's Anatomy, which I thought was pretty unique. I can't remember their names off the top of my head right now. It's Alex and I can't remember the other guy's name, the characters in Grey's Anatomy. But Justin Chambers is the Flash, and Kevin McKidd is, I'm going to say Batman, and without giving away too much, just I'll leave it at that because I don't want to spoil who Batman is. The basic plot of the movie is essentially that the Flash goes so fast that he travels back in time and creates a time paradox. So there's some different versions of history that happen. So there's different heroes in different roles, different villains in different roles. And it's really worth watching. It's Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox. And if you've got a chance to rent it on iTunes or pick it up in some way, it's really, really worth it. But I should send out a warning to anybody that likes to watch this kind of stuff with their kids. This is violent. People die. There's a lot of blood. They don't necessarily get into gory stuff, but there are some very inappropriate images for kids. It's not a kid's cartoon. It's really kind of... It's the animated version of superheroes we all wanted when we were 18, but we didn't get.
Interesting.
You know, like it's really an animated action movie. That is the best way I can put it. You know, like you're thinking about the old Schwarzenegger, you know, movies like Predator and stuff like that. Like it really is that kind of context, short of swearing, you know, which is funny because it probably doesn't have any nudity and doesn't have any swearing to keep a certain rating, which I think is PG-13. But it certainly has enough violence, you know, to warrant it. PG-13 is the rating on it, which I think is a little bit, I don't know. Like it's pretty heavy and, it's well done. I highly, highly recommend it. And, because, our original guest this evening was going to be Eric Mahler. He had some stuff come up. He was going to join Ryan and I, and he's into comics. I want to save at least some of this to talk about next week. Because I think he would enjoy it as well. So, but that's it. That's my recommendation. That was my big cool thing that I watched this week.
Cool. Well, I mean, I've never watched any of these, you know, direct to DVD DC movies, but I hear really good things.
And oh, dude.
Considering,
yeah, they're really, you know, good.
Not into comics. I mean, I love the idea of comics, but I don't read comics. And I think this is based on, you know, an event that happened in the comics. And I know there was that Dark Knight Returns stuff that was turned into a comic. I feel like I'm missing out not watching these things, you know? Especially with Batman versus Superman coming out in 2 years, it might be a good idea to actually watch Batman Returns or whatever they call it.
Yeah, some of my favorites from the directed DVD release from Warner Brothers have been, let's see here, I want to say, not Gotham Knights, it was... Batman Under the Red Hood is a really good story and a really good animated show or animated DVD release. Green Lantern Emerald Knights was very good. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that Nathan Fillion voices Hal Jordan in that. Nathan Fillion voices Hal Jordan in this movie that I talk about today, too. Also, Batman and Superman, The Elite. Public Enemies. Batman, Superman, Public Enemies is another really good one. And I remember reading that comic, and there are certain points in that animated DVD release that they really kind of go frame for frame in the comic as storyboards for the sequence that's unfolding on screen. And it's cool when you remember it just enough to say, oh my God, this is so cool. Like, I'm watching this comic book come to life, you know, as Superman and Batman are animated. And again, it's Kevin Conroy, it's Tim Daly, Mark Hamill's the Joker, like in a lot of these DVDs, they bring back all the classic, you know, voice actors, which make it, so much better. When you've got that kind of air of familiarity, I'm not always on board with the character designs. Superman does not play a big role in the movie, in the Flashpoint Paradox, and he's fun. He's Superman. Like, he's just this giant, you know, super hero that swoops in and saves the day. But the design for him was really odd. Like, he had a very, very tiny waist, and his eyes were really close together. And it just, you could tell that the love in the movie was given to the Flash and some of the more, you know, the more key characters to the story. Whereas other characters that didn't have a big role, the design were not kind of honed as well as they could be?
Well, I mean, you know, it seems like they've jammed a lot of characters into this.
A huge amount of characters. And especially considering the twists that happen when he goes back in time, you know, and does stuff. Like, it's you know, I mean, and I shouldn't say the Flash goes back in time. There's a time paradox, but there's two people that are capable of going back in time, and it's a twisty kind of way of unfolding it. The best thing I can pull out of it in terms of a comment to the story is that it's not condescending. It doesn't smack you over the head. Like, you really have to watch it and pay attention to figure out what's going on. It's something that too many kids' cartoons do, the plots are just too basic. You know, you figure out what's going to happen in Act 1, you know, and this really, you have to get into Act 3 before you really start to see things coming together.
Oh, cool. So,
yeah. Well, that's it for me for TV watching. I really haven't had a whole lot of time. I guess we can probably just skip on right ahead into, let's see, are you listening to anything worth mentioning? I hear that a friend of ours has a new album.
Yeah, I picked up Eric Band Skyhawks. It's not Skyhawk. It was his nickname Skyhawk.
His name is Van Skyhawk.
You're right. I'm butchering it, but he put out an album, Shattered. I picked it up, and it's really good. Like, it's I've listened through it 3 or 4 times now. I had a data entry project at work today, so it was sort of like it made it go a lot better. But it's interesting. He has two of his best podcast themes on the album, for App Slappy, which was, you know, not used a lot because App Slappy is now kind of, you know, on hiatus. But also, I don't know if you listened to All Work No Play with a couple voice actors, Liam O'Brien and his friend Sam Riegel, I think.
No, I haven't listened to that.
It's another podcast that's not really put out a lot, but when it does, it's basically two friends drinking and doing a very funny and sometimes crass podcast. But I love voice acting and stuff, so it's really cool. And one of the best parts about it, you know, it's a really great podcast, but it also has a really great intro theme. And those are both two intro themes that I could listen to over and over again, and they are included in his album, so it's really nice to have those, especially now that App Slappy isn't coming out every week. But it's a really cool album. It's I'm not a big music guy, so I wouldn't be able to describe it, but it's your electronica sort of, you know, that sort of thing. Like, mm-hmm. We're probably all familiar with Skyhawk's work, having done a bunch of themes on the Frog Pants network. But it's good stuff. It's $10 on iTunes. Totally worth it.
Nice. Very, very cool. Now, is it funny music? Like, it's not like Pollen Storm comedy stuff.
No.
It's a serious album.
It's a serious album, and it's kind of like, I mean, I hate to compare it to anything because, again, like, I'm awful when it comes to music, but it feels sort of like Crystal Method kind of stuff, like that sort of kind of music, like electronica.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some vocals in there, which I think are, you know, sometimes hit and miss when it comes to electronic music, but the two vocal tracks that he has are actually really good, and I'm really digging them. It's not him singing, not that that would be a problem, but he's got I can't remember the artist's name, but he's got another artist in there who's doing vocals for him, and it just sounds so cool. And they actually did a preview on Tuesday's TMS, I think.
But oh, cool.
If you go to the album on iTunes, you can get a preview of all the tracks, and they're definitely all worth a listen. So
nice.
Yeah.
That is on my list. I need some new music. I've been neglecting my iTunes library lately, and I've been wanting to do some drawing. And I've been doing a lot of drawing in silence, but I've also got noisy neighbors in the backyard with screaming children until they go to bed. So I need something loud to put in the headphones to drown them out.
So this is some great work in music.
Oh yeah? Cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Right on. Well, I guess I can drop into the internet minute here at the end of our show. And I found a couple of really cool, I want to say projects and clips online. The first is a simple behind the scenes video for Angry Birds Star Wars 2. What's unique about this is that they actually have Ian McDiarmid of Star Wars fame doing the voice of the Emperor, who is in Angry Birds a pig. So it's basically a behind the scenes clip of McDermid going into Rovio and recording the voice acting and stuff like that. And he also shares some tidbits about what it was like to record and also do the physical acting in the original Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. And I won't spoil those tidbits for you. It's only a couple minutes long. Well worth checking out on YouTube. We'll have the link in the show notes here, and I'll throw them in the chat room here as well. It's hilarious. Like, it's just because it's Angry Birds, of course, they're taking Star Wars with a grain of salt and they're making fun of some things, and it's really, really funny stuff. It makes me want to actually play the game.
Yeah.
Just to kind of see. Because I like, you know, I'm not so precious with my Star Wars that it has to be, you know, it cannot be made fun of. You know, like, I really enjoyed Lego Star Wars stuff when it was out because it was true to the universe and the spirit, but also had some really funny moments, you know, when they make fun of stuff and whatnot. And the other thing that I've got is also of the sci-fi genre, but it's sci-fi made very, very real. And it's Canadian, which is just so cool to me, especially now that Kickstarter is available in Canada. And these are Little Robot Friends by Aesthetic Studio. And what they are, it's a Kickstarter that is trying to get the money up. Well, actually, they've more than funded, excuse me, they've almost double funded to produce these little programmable interactive robots. And they don't look like a whole lot at first. They're basically a piece of plastic with some sensors and some lights. They're sensitive to light, touch, and sound, as well as one another. They have little wood bases that they stick into, and they also plug into your computer and are an intro project for programming for hardware.
Huh.
Which is, I thought it was very, very cool. Like, it's open source, like, you can program it to do different things. You can program it to interact differently with different types of robots if you buy them, that sort of thing. And the video does a better job explaining it and what it is and how it works than I will ever be able to. But everything about it is manufactured, distributed, and created here in Canada. And it is a very cool, not only just a toy, but an opportunity for some creative learning and creative programming in kids and adults alike, I think. I mean, I know I would have some fun with this. So if you're at all interested in robotics and wanting to try, you know, some hardware programming, then check out Little Robot Friends on Kickstarter. So what about you, sir? Do you have any picks to share this week?
You know, I haven't got anything for you. Like, it's funny, the internet has sort of been this, a lot of news stories, but, you know, I don't really find very interesting things. I mean, there's been a lot of interesting stuff come out of the GTA 5 release.
I was going to ask you if there's been anything, you know, in the realm of video games that you can talk about.
Yeah, I mean, It's a big game, you know, a budget of like $250 million, made $800 million in the first 24 hours, but it's also one of those titles that is closely related to the whole, oh, video games are warping our children debate, you know, alongside Call of Duty and that. Mm-hmm. And for every story that is like, you know, people lined up and bought a copy, there's like these odd stories that come out where like, someone dressed up as a cop and pretended to butt in line so he could get his GTA game, or, you know, this isn't funny, but some guy got like stabbed and his copy of the game was stolen.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's just like the news, the media goes out there and finds these stories, which could happen to anybody. I mean, I could be waiting in line for an iPhone. You know, I'm not like, hopefully I'm not predicting anything, but that happens all the time. Like, people get robbed for lesser things and the media goes out and says, ah, see, video games. But there's been some great sort of on both sides, like where you have a newscaster who's just making a fool of herself or himself. The reason I say herself is there's a specific example out there, but, you know, just saying like, oh, video games are bad and can't you see? And then you have the other stuff where it's like just looking at, you know, I think there was a great video that Discovery News did where they talked about how video games would actually help you, if you don't have violent tendencies, to actually fulfill those fantasies in your head and relieve stress and stuff, you know? The most important part being if you don't have violent tendencies, because
yeah.
when you have violent tendencies, usually
more violence is not going to help that. Yeah.
Yeah, you're easily triggered when you have that's hence violent tendencies.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you're mature and you're capable of handling, you know, things that aren't real, you could probably go out and pick up GTA yeah. 5.
Jocelyn and I had a discussion the other day about how media skews statistics, especially surrounding video games. Mm-hmm. There was a guy that she retweeted the other day that was talking about the release of GTA 5. That's Grand Theft Auto 5 for any of my non-gaming right, so, listeners. Yeah. But it can be a very violent video game because it's about theft and, you know, crime. Mm-hmm. This guy was basically talking about the stat that said that, you know, violent video games affect, you know, 15% of our, you know, current youth in this country. And they're basically coming down really hard on not just GTA 5, but, you know, the gaming industry in general. And the guy was like, you know, you can also take a stat that says 97% of today's youth play video games. Statistically speaking, that's damn near everybody, mm-hmm. which means within that 97%, the chances of somebody, if not a swath of people, having violent tendencies or drug addictions or, you know, anything, like throw it in there, marital problems, you know, dyslexia, like, I mean, anything in there, you're going to hit them. Like, you know, yeah. it's like spraying a crowd with a fire hose and saying, I'm surprised somebody got wet. You know, like,
yeah,
it's really kind of backwards the way that some people deal with the stats surrounding, you know, video games and violence, which seems to be a hot topic lately, but.
If there's one thing I'm looking forward to about having kids, it's that, you know, I want to challenge, it's already being challenged, but for some reason, you know, modern media doesn't just ignores those cases. They're like, oh, those are fringe cases. But I want to challenge the fact that, you know, allowing your kids to play games that they're right for. You know, a game may have, like Halo, it's going to have a mature rating. You know, there's some B words and some S words and, you know, the F word isn't thrown out there. And I'm just trying to keep it clean here. But, you know, I think my kid at a certain age, he doesn't necessarily have to be 17 to play Halo. But when you look at Grand Theft Auto 5, for much as we defend it, it does have some bad, you know, bad stuff in there in the sense that, you know, it's been being pegged for being overly, you know, masculine and the GTA series has never really treated women in sort of a very good light. And that's a whole other discussion. I mean, something we've talked about on the Gamers Inn multiple times is the way women are treated in video games and how it's done right and how it's done sort of like an ignored factor and how it's done just plain awful.
Yeah.
GTA sort of, you know, rides the line in that sense, but more so for the aspect of like parody and not necessarily like, you know, just thinking it's funny, but more just, you know, poking fun at itself, right? And it just, you know, it'll be interesting to see when, you know, our generation starts to have kids where we grew up with video games and we understand that, you know, this is fake and, you know, we can pass that knowledge down. Because when I was a kid, my parents just, you know, had to make educated guesses when it came to video games. And their educated guess was, you know, as long as you don't show any, you know, you don't do anything weird, I guess you can play whatever game you want.
Yeah, as long as your behavior doesn't change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that was the way they went about it. But I know when, you know, I know when I have kids, I'm going to be the one playing those games. So I'll be able to make that decision. And you know, I think when it comes right down to it, parents just need to take a very active role in choosing video games and maybe ignore mainstream news for multiple reasons. I mean,
yeah.
Mainstream news is awful.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's play, not the, just play the game with your kid. Even if you're not going to play it all the time, at least sit down and have them show you what it is and how it works and, you know, get that kind of interaction. And that's true of anything. That's true of mm-hmm. Facebook, the internet in general. You know, that's true of movies. You know, what your kid is or your teenager is going to see at the theaters with their friends when they go out, you know, for a Saturday afternoon matinee on their own. You know, yeah. it just being aware of all that kind of stuff is, I think, important. I mean, I say this not having kids.
Yeah,
having friends that have kids under 5, and the internet is definitely not an issue yet. So I mean, I you know, I'm certainly speaking out of turn, but I can certainly, you know, take a look at what's happening with some of my, for example, Chad, a former co-host on the show, his younger brother is 22-ish, give or take, And seeing how Corey uses the internet compared to seeing how you and I use the internet, it's just different. You know, I can't say what's right or wrong, but you can certainly see how much social media plays in his real social scope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like not just friends, not just, you know, professional stuff, because he's actually a young artist. But like, for me, like a lot of the internet tends to be marketing and sure interaction with some friends, but it's a heavy learning experience for me. Whereas, I mean, like the internet is his default way to mm-hmm. contact friends. You know, whereas when I was his age, it would be phone calls, you know, phone calls and texting and stuff like that. So I think there's what, between probably 5 and 8 years between you and I, give or take.
Right. I didn't grow up with the internet throughout my life, but it definitely was a good portion of it. But yeah. I think you nailed it on the head. Like, I don't think we need to apologize for not having kids, but I think you have the right idea in the sense that, you know, just you understand that you were a kid once and all you need to do is just, you know, have your parents sit down with you, know what they're doing. I mean, I don't know why mainstream media is focusing on a stupid video game when they should be focusing on Facebook. You know, shit goes down on Facebook every day that mm-hmm. would give you nightmares.
Yeah.
So agreed. It's way worse. And I think, you know, and I've seen some of the stuff, you know, firsthand, you know, with family and personal stuff, like just Facebook is icky. And if you don't watch what you do on it, like things can happen.
Yeah.
And especially with like job interviews and stuff like that, like, you know, GTA 5 isn't going to come up in a job interview, but if you do something stupid on Facebook and it's there for the internet to see, like that might surface, mm-hmm. you know?
Oh, I've seen plenty of headlines about people not getting jobs because of, you know, social media or other things that they've done getting in the way. Yeah. And I've also seen the reverse. I've mm-hmm. also seen job opportunities come up for people because they are, you know, super involved in the internet socially and their hobbies and very vocal about it in, you know, a common sense kind of way. I won't go as far as to say as professional, but just people are just aware that the whole world can see what they're writing and saying. And, you know, if you use that to your advantage, you can get work opportunities that you would never would have thought of before.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, yeah, that's right. Common sense is probably one of the best things a person can have, but it also seems to be lacking, especially
yeah.
on the internet.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest holes in the internet. You know. commonsense.com.
Yeah.
So speaking of video games, though, I mean, obviously we're all friends here between the Citadel Cafe and Gamers Inn, seeing as my girlfriend Jocelyn is the other half of your show,
mm-hmm.
Or you're the other half of her show. I'll let you fight that out.
It's a partnership.
Yeah, I'm not gonna dig that hole. She's not here, so I can say stuff like that without her barging in and throwing a shoe at the back of my head. But what's coming up this Friday night on the Gamers Inn?
Oh man, Friday is so close. Friday night, we're starting off the show with a bit of goddess talk. I always want to say goddess, but it's definitely not goddess. It can't be. It's a goddess, which is Peter Molyneux's new game. Hit early access on Steam. I know I have access via Kickstarter, and Jocelyn got a copy as well.
Yeah, I believe Scotty D was kind enough to send her a gift copy.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, no, I believe she's been playing. I mean, last I checked, we were going to talk about that and what we're playing. I'm also going to try to get a couple hours in on Wind Waker HD, another, you know, one of few games to come out on the Wii U, but I'll definitely have some things to say about that. But in our topic, we're actually going to have Andrew Allen on to talk about free play and... all kinds of just video game music related stuff. And I actually ran into him at Nerdtacular and he's a really cool guy. And, you know, he was more than happy to say, we'll come on the show and we'll talk video game music. And we'll talk, you know, how hard it is to get the rights from these companies. And it'll be interesting. So we'll go live 8:30 PM Eastern on amove.tv. And we, you know, usually go an hour or so, but, you know, get there early. We'll be in the chat room.
Nice. I always look forward to checking that out with you guys on Friday nights. It's fun sometimes to be in the chat room and get the delay, you know, hearing Jocelyn laugh down the hall and then hearing on the stream what was said that makes her cackle. But it was, it's always a good show. If you want more information, you can check out gamersandpodcast.com or, of course, amove.tv/TGI for details. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am doing online at joelduggan.com. You can also find my book, StarCrossed Volume 1, is available in my web store. You can find me on Twitter and Google Plus with just my name. Don't forget to swing by our website for the show notes, links to all the cool stuff that we've talked about, including, of course, the podcast itself on thecitadelcafe.com. You can also email the show with thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus with just the show name. I am easy to be found, whether it's via the show or via my own Twitter or online presence. Just track me down, ask me the question that you have, and I'm sure I will get it to the right venue for getting on the show. If you have questions or want to contribute, just like Molly, a TCC fan in our live chat room, sent in a news clip about GTA 5 during the conversation. Obviously, Ryan and I didn't have a chance to talk about it now, but we can certainly take a look after the show. So I will include that in the show notes as well. Ryan, where can people find you online?
You can follow me on Twitter at rmurphy. Mention the Gamers Inn. We actually just recorded, I'm going to post after this, our Year of Zamp special, Zombies Ate My Podcast. I can't believe, but it's been an entire year since we started.
A year of brains. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, or lack thereof, depending on whether you listen to the show or not. I'm not talking specifically about me, but it's been a lot of fun, and we look back, we talk about the changes of the show, we talk about the future, and it's all very exciting. Also, I do a podcast with Paul, Sleeping with the Elephant, with Paul Swickard. And that's a show where Paul tries to make fun of Canada, and it's just so much easier to make fun of America when you really think about it. All he has is Tim Hortons jokes. Hope you're listening, Paul.
Nice. Very, very cool. Do you guys do that live?
No, we don't. Which is odd because it's probably next to Gamers Inn, one of our more scheduled show. It does go live on the podcast feed Monday nights usually. I'll have to talk to Paul about doing it live because we really could. We kind of have a full kit and caboodle going when we record.
Yeah, I like Sleeping with the Elephant, and I think that a live chat room would probably, especially if we can get some Canadians and Americans in the chat room at the same time. Yeah. I think there would be some interesting stuff. You could probably even have like a question period too for a special live episode or something.
Ooh, I like. Well, you know what? It's funny with as opposed to Gamers Inn, which is a video game show with Zamp and Sleeping with the Elephant. We've been getting a lot of cool feedback. So, and I think it's just more because it's a niche podcast, right? So, yeah, no, I think a live show would be really cool. I'd like to think. If I can get more people on my side, I mean, you know, there's not a lot of Canadians out there, so.
Well, I can't believe I forgot to mention that at the top of the show, but I actually was on Biggest Fan Podcast on the A-Move Network last week. They did their Canada Week, and I was up against Kyle as Brock had issued a Canadian citizenship test. It was 10 questions, multiple choice, and I certainly scored better than my American counterpart.
Oh man, I so have to watch this.
It was only audio, but it was a fun show. Brockett and Kyle do a great job. I'm Biggest Fan. If you're not familiar, they basically take anything from pop culture or media in general, become the biggest fan of it for a week or a couple months, depending on how big the project is, and then report back on it. So they've done stuff like Twilight. I think next up was the Riddick movie series with Vin Diesel. Was what they're doing on their next episode. So check them out on amove.tv as well, and check out the Canadian episode. So Ryan, if you need a Canadian tag team partner to bring the hurt on Paul and whatever poor American sap that he's decides to drag into the ring with you and I, then I am on board, sir.
Well, you know what? I'm going to talk to Paul. You know, no one let him listen to this episode, but we'll get us recording live, and I'll bring him the big guns. We got. Yeah, well, I mean, the only Canadian podcasters I know, like Joel and Jocelyn, I guess. The rest are American, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right on. That's it for me. That's it for the show. We've run a little bit long, but I think we've been able to deliver some excellent content. You have been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. You ready?
Mm-hmm.